The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and by popular demand, I am delighted again to be able to speak to expert analyst and stock market guru Paul Scott about all things small caps. So welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Sorry, I've just spilt my Diet Coke all over my lap.
Probably because of the music, actually. You were dancing to it, weren't you?
So I'm just doing okay. Operation mop-up at the moment. Yeah. But no, let's get started. Hi, everyone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've obviously had lots of big geopolitical news, actually, over the last week. We've got Syria and South Korea. But before we sort of like run through sort of what that all means for the markets, I'd just like a big shout out to our sponsors who keep the show on, which is goodmoney.guide.com. And if, just a reminder, if anybody wants to put a review on their website, one of the brokers, or even one for Paul or for Vox Markets, then please do so, because you've got a chance to get £500 for Christmas and also a 50% discount on their subscription. But it's a good service. But anyway, before we run through sort of the markets, I know you've been out and about in the golden streets of London over the last week and a half, and it's sort of like you've been absorbed, I understand, by a lot of lovely places where they serve some liquid refreshment. Anyway, from your travels with those investors and the fund managers, was there anything of note that you sort of like, you know, you picked up their optimism for next year, their pessimism, or how they thought it might work out, particularly in the sort of small cap sector where we've been battered this last 3 years?
Yeah, I was surprised at how downbeat everyone seems. These are mostly professional investors and city people and so on that I've been networking with the last week or two. And yeah, there just seems still a mood of despondency. And people are saying, well, what's the catalyst for small caps and mid caps to come alive again? And I said, well, it's takeover bids. There's loads of them happening. So, I mean, but I do seem to be a sort of standout optimist, I think it's fair to say, amongst my peers. So,
join the club. I mean, I'm sort of optimistic for next year as well. I've been saying it for quite some time that I think the catalyst, okay, you've got M&A, which is showing you the real deep value, but also I think the earnings will start coming through on small caps, and then you'll get a re-rating. But one thing which certainly hit me was quite interesting, actually. I suppose it's not a massive surprise, was what the sort of the job market in the UK is saying, because post-budget, and I know you've been pretty much sort of like you predicted this, but there's been a slowdown in recruitment, and certainly a lot of job vacancies have been taken off the sort of like from companies because of the budget, because they're worried about the increase in employers. And I don't know whether that's going to be, is it transitional, or how do you see that?
Well, we've had statements from lots and lots of companies now, haven't we, quantifying this is how X number of millions extra it's going to cost us from April 2025. Remember, we've got a 4 month window where companies can plan, and most companies are saying, look, we're going to have to mitigate, you know, we can mitigate some of this, but we'll also have to raise prices. So, I mean, nothing particularly earth shattering. I think, like all sort of shocks to the system, the market is busy digesting it and pricing it in. So I'm not particularly concerned about this now that it's known it's happened. We've had quite a lot of good quality businesses have 10 to 20% falls in share prices, which I think has created some opportunities. So I bought some Kingfisher and some Pets at Home, for example, on the recent sharp falls there. So I'm seeing more opportunity than threat now, because the market quickly prices things in, doesn't it, when they change?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I would say you're right. It's like it is to be sort of transitional, any sort of the job market. The only problem is such that if it does push up unemployment, that, you know, in terms of next year, might sort of take the wind off sort of consumer wallets, etc., or the spending power.
Well, I see it the other way around, really, that you're going to have inflation busting minimum wage increases from April, which with all the quite a few companies mentioned that you then have to maintain the differentials, which I think is laying the groundwork for a nice consumer spending, certainly recovery, maybe not quite boom, but, you know, particularly the lower paid, you know, are getting 7, 8, 9% increases. With inflation probably going to be at 2.5 or 3%. I just think there are some nice opportunities opening up for next year. But interesting you mentioned the recruiters, because I was looking at those last night, and the sector is so bombed out, isn't it? Yeah. Really is. Something's not right, I think. I was talking to one recruiter who said part of the problem is all the candidates want to work from home. So if they're being offered a job, they're saying, well, I want at least 2 or 3 days a week working at home, but the employers don't want to offer that. So that maybe there's a bit of a sort of jam in the system because of this work from home business.
Mm. I also think quite a lot of the vacancies aren't real vacancies, because I think quite a few companies are sort of like just taking the foot off the pedal in terms of their recruitment and hiring, simply because they don't know the impact of AI and technology next year as they want to try and automate more of their sort of manual processes. But hey, we'll wait and see. You're right. The sort of the recruiters, you'd think would be starting to actually recover a bit, but they're certainly not. The share prices are still
I mean, look, that's right. And looking at some of them, it's absolutely shocking. Some of the big, you know, the bigger, the mid cap, the higher quality ones. Like, I think I looked at Robert Walters and S3 and several others last night. And some of these things, Hayes, and some of these things, you know, are barely trading above break even. And they used to be, you know, big, reliable profit earners. So something funny's going on with the staffing companies, and it's global. It's not just UK. Yes. I can't quite put my finger on it. But for that reason, I've just decided to hang back before going. I want to go into the staffing sector, but something doesn't feel right, and I don't think the valuations are low enough to make it tempting.
No, I would agree. If I was going to go anywhere, I'd go into the automation and the technology side to replace manual, because I think that's where the direction of travel is. Just on the sort of buys and sales, my own portfolio this week, I've actually come out of PayPal. It's a big company, obviously, and it's sort of like poster child of e-payments. And the reason was because I was looking at my sectoral exposure to online payments, and it was getting well above 30%, and I just thought that was perhaps a bit too much. So the shares had done reasonably well, so I just took that down. So it's now back to about 25 or 26%.
I think that segues nicely into your dramatic news today on Equals Group. It's finally come good for you. So I'm absolutely thrilled. I've got lots and lots of friends in this one, including yourself, obviously, who are in it big. Yeah. And it finally came good today with a £1.40 agreed bid. So tell us about this one, Paul.
No, you're right. It's only taken 13 months, so it's just it's been a sort of perpetual sort of like it's stuck in sort of jam here. But anyway, so the consortia finally. It was sort of like strange this morning at 7 o'clock. That they didn't put an RNS out, because that's been the previous modus operandi, that as soon as they wanted to extend the put up and shut up, they would put it out at 7. Anyway, that didn't happen. So it was either going to go or it was going to stop. It was going to be one or the two. And so we were all waiting to see which one it was. The shares moved a bit, but not much anyway. Anyway, so about 12:15 this afternoon, they put a 1.35 bid in all cash, but plus a 5p special dividend. Yes. From the consortium at 140. It's been agreed by management. The irrevocable sort of voting or shareholders is only 16.5%. So there's still quite a bit away. The minimum threshold they've put at the moment is 75, but that can be obviously reduced down to 50%. There's very little conditionality other than it has to go through the competition authorities and the regulators and the people like, you know, so that's pretty bog standard. The key test is going to be when they put the notice out for the general meeting and they look for shareholder approvals. I think there's about a 30-day notification period, usually is anyway. So if that was the case and they did it tonight or tomorrow, then it would mean the general meeting where all the sort of professional investors, your Schroders, your was it Columbia Threadneedle and all these guys, they will vote in around early to mid January on whether they're going to accept it. My view, I mean, I've spoken to these guys so much. I trust them 100%. I will vote my own shares in line with their recommendation. In terms of the actual price, I think, as we've all said, it's never been a blockbuster, you know, all coming deal, as like, you know, the actual price. However, I do actually think it's fair. And if you put yourself in the position of the consortia, it's basically what they're doing is a Charlie Munger sort of like Warren Buffett thing, which is it's better to buy a sort of like very good company at a fair price than a fair company at a very good price. And I think they've done the former with Equals. So there isn't, in my view, there isn't a massive takeover premium, but I think it's fair. And frankly, I trust what the board will recommend, so I will just follow them. But anyway, we'll wait and see. There's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, my take on it is, I think the logical thing to do now, in my opinion, would be to sell in the market, because you're capturing nearly the whole price. And I would say there's a substantial chance of the shareholders rejecting this. So, because 16% irrevocables at this stage is hopeless. So, and then the trouble is, if the bid does fall through, then I think management's position is untenable, and you've then potentially lost the bid and lost the management. So, for that reason, it's not a advice or recommendation, but the logical step to me would be to sell in the market. But what do you think? Come back to me on it.
I was going to say, that sounds like a positive view for Christmas.
Well, I mean, yeah, why hold out for 4 or 5p when you've got to wait, 3 to 6 months for it, and there's a good chance you won't get the bid at all?
There is always a chance that somebody else comes out in late in the day, albeit I would say that is pretty narrow, given that they haven't come out.
Everybody's looked at it by now, surely.
Yeah. I mean, well, let's wait and see what the shareholders... I don't think they've actually sounded out the shareholders in terms of the big ones yet, hence it's 16.5% irrevocable, and that will be the process they'll need to do.
Updates, won't we? So, you know, they normally update on that side of things. Well, above all, hearty congratulations. I'm so thrilled. It's been a stressful 13 months for you, because this is your biggest position, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was at the end of back end. I mean, I had a November to remember in 23, a really good end of the year. In December was good as well. And I think the Equals shares were probably around about 115, 110 at that time. So they haven't really moved a shed load since. But as I say, I actually... You know, if I was going to, I think the management have done a great job in keeping the business, because they did put what the sales have done this, and they're up over 30% year to date in November, yeah, and they're over 100 million flipping, you know, 119 million end of November year to date sales.
But if none of the bid activity had happened at all, I think there's a fair chance the share price would be higher than £1.40 by now.
I was doing the numbers and looking at the historicals. The multiple is about 11.2 times historical EBITDA and about 16 times PE. And they have a bit of cash, but not much sort of like phrase. So it's about 16 times. See what you're paying. If you're paying a peg of one, then offensively it's 16% growth on the EPS, which I think they're doing more than that, basically. But anyway, we'll wait and see. Okay, good. Let's move to another company that I think one you quite like, which is James Latham, which is the sort of like the timber building distributor, which is this one should be a cyclical winner, I presume, next year once the building industry starts getting going.
Yeah, it had a real exceptional period of profitable trading during the pandemic, when it was able to secure the scarce supplies and pretty much ask whatever price they wanted at the time of a building and DIY type of boom. So they had a very good pandemic. Then the shares, you know, have retraced a fair bit. So I crunched all the numbers fresh on this one, and I think it's quite good value now. I'm coming out at an EPS figure of about £1. for, I think that's for March 2025. Yeah, and actually the broker consensus is £1.05, so it looks like my figures are about right. So you're only paying about a PE of 12. Well, why is that interesting? Well, the answer is because that goes in conjunction with an amazing balance sheet. It's one of the most remarkable small to slightly mid-cap type balance sheets that you'll ever see. It's only at a 17% premium to net tangible asset value, the market cap. It just, the management seem to love sitting on big piles of cash. It's one of these family-owned and run things that operate the business very conservatively. If you zoom out on the chart, it's done phenomenally well long-term. I mean, just around the time of the great financial crisis in March 2009, it was a pound a share. So it's 12 bagged since then, which is not what you expect for a timber distributor, is it?
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Look at that.
Yeah, extraordinary long-term track record. And I just think this is a really good quality business. And the current price looks attractive. It is very tightly held, so you get a wide bid offer spread. That's the thing that sort of put me off buying any personally, but it's certainly on my watch list. I think if it drops any more, say if it dropped down from £12 to a tenner a share, I think at that level I'd probably be tempted to start nibbling a few myself.
Yeah, no, it looks good. I think the whole sector, building products, is going to do well next year once housing will eventually get going. And just look at the housing prices. They're up over 4.5% year to date. And mortgage availability is getting better. And I think people are still pretty desperate to buy a house, actually. I think the demand is still there. So,
I agree completely. Looking at the various trading updates over the last few months, actually, building supplies companies and the house builders themselves, they're all kind of saying, well, there hasn't really been a recovery yet, no green shoots as such, but I think most of them seem to be saying mid-2025 is when we'll probably start seeing the building and the building product sector, supply sector starting to recover. So I think we might have mentioned this last week. So I want to get 6 months ahead of that.
Yeah.
So I think now is the time to be buying. I think I mentioned last week, actually, I've bought some Brickability.
Yes.
And I'm looking at other building products companies. There's some very nice shares at very reasonable valuations still. So, yeah, interesting sector, definitely.
Okay, well, we've got plenty of questions coming in. Anybody wants to ask Paul a question, then I'll drop it. Just drop it in the chat bot and I'll read them out. We've got one from Otman Salamat. He's asking about Warpaint and its latest acquisition, which I think was Brand Architect, or it's been proposed, isn't it, as a sort of like a... probably a scheme of arrangement. Basically, Warpaint, for people, is a cosmetics challenger brand that's expanding very rapidly, and the shares have done brilliantly. And I think both me and Paul have got a bit of FOMO on it because we've missed it. But but anyway, sort of, I don't know if you've got any latest thoughts on whether this makes sense, bringing another sort of like a lesser cosmetics brands into something which is charging ahead.
Yeah, well, Brand Architects has been a big disappointer over the years, but it's very small, shouldn't really be listed, but it has a nice cash pile. I think they changed the management, who don't seem to have really achieved anything noteworthy. So I was quite surprised. I think you mentioned you were surprised as well that Warpaint nipped in and bought Brand Architects. But look, Warpaint know their business and their sector inside out, so they've obviously seen something attractive in Brand Architect. Maybe, I don't know what, maybe some sort of sleeping brands with good potential. I don't know what they've seen in it, but obviously they're the experts, not me. So I'm very comfortable that Warpaint know what they're doing. So if they think it's a good deal, it is a good deal.
Yeah, I'd have to have a look at the details to see which asset, particular brand they think they can really scale and join that thoroughbred stable. And if they do, then that's great. Okay,
I've just got a slight worry with Warpaint about, you know, they're getting makeup manufactured in China relatively cheap. We know that Chinese companies, particularly Shein and Temu, are beginning to sell direct to you. Well, not beginning to. They're very successfully selling direct to UK consumers. So I'm a bit worried that the Chinese might start to say, well, hang on, we don't need Warpaint. we can actually, we know exactly what's in the products. We can make them and sell them at a third of the price direct to UK consumers. So that is my worry generally about China, but I think war paint could be a little bit exposed to that.
Yeah, you sort of like, you forget really that, when it comes to sort of copying, these guys are the master copiers, aren't they, at really low prices. So exactly. Anything, even brands you think have got strong sort of economic moats and competitive positions actually could be vulnerable, but you're right.
They could. So I'm not quite as bullish on war paint as I was. Love the company, love everything it's done. But as I say, this Chinese issue, because if I don't know if you saw Temu have one of the big Chinese direct to go, they're starting to recruit UK suppliers for larger items. So they're not just air freighting in small packages. They're looking to now, which that could be seriously bad news for a lot of UK retailers.
What sort of items? Sort of a sofa, is it, or television?
Furniture,
or something?
Yeah, all sorts. I mean, the only thing, as I quipped in my Substack, I occasionally buy things from Temu, and I bought some lovely garden gnomes, thinking they would be great for my garden. When they turned up, they were an inch high. So I couldn't put them in the garden because they could be a choking hazard for the local hedgehog community. Yeah.
Strange, you don't seem to be a garden gnome man, but obviously.
No. Well, they were only about £1 each, and I thought, oh, that's so cheap, I've got to buy them. So if you order a sofa from Temu, just make sure check the dimensions. You don't want to end up with a doll's house sofa.
If you put garden gnomes outside of my house, you get shot by the locals, I think. That'd be target practice. Yeah. Okay, just before we move off the building product, because we obviously talked about James Latham, we've got Ben Sharman asking about the house builders, especially Springfield, which is a Scottish house builder, which does timber frame buildings, I think. It's been going through a bit of a tough patch in terms of, about two years ago, had quite a lot of high debt, and it's sold some land, removed a lot of the problem with its leverage. I don't know how you want to see this one. I think this is trading below net tangible book, I think, still.
Yeah, I've got 0.69, so that's well below. That's on the Stockopedia stock report. I have to say, and rather neglectfully, I missed this one. It reported, I think it might have been this week or late last week, and I didn't get around to looking at it, I'm afraid. So I wouldn't want to comment any further on it. Other than that, the valuation metrics do look quite attractive, but practically all of the house builders have sold off a lot lately. So you've really got, the whole sector to pick from.
Yeah. I interviewed Lawrence Hulse from Dowgate, or from Onward Opportunities, who's done really well in the sort of small cap sector about, I don't know, 10 days ago. And he was talking about Springfield Properties. And one thing about them, they've got a lot of land in really lovely areas in terms of, in between Glasgow and Edinburgh, which is highly coveted sort of real estate, which is a bit of a benefit. And then I asked him about the cladding issue. And they obviously, because it's timber, they haven't got any cladding problems direct. Ooh. The only thing I would say, which is hanging a bit over the whole house building sector, and there have been there's been rumours in the press, that if the government decides to impose an additional tax now, they've already put one tax on all house builders. They might do another one, and they are talking about that too, because the cost of the cladding is coming in much higher, and it's going to take much longer than anybody expected. So that would be my only take. If I was going to play, and I am playing the recovery in the housing market, I'm playing it through the building products rather than through the house builders, simply because the uncertainty associated with what the government could do to the house builders to fund the cladding, even if they've got nothing to do with it, which is what they can do that, can't they?
I think that's wise. I mean, the only house builder I've touched recently was Vistry, which I did manage to catch a little bit of a bounce on that, but I've sold those since to focus on other things. That one I think is oversold. But the others, no, I'm generally steering away from the sector because it's not just business as usual, as you say. The new government's not been in power very long, so they haven't had a chance really to formulate any particularly new policies. But I'm quite sure that, you know, taxing developers more highly. And maybe that's justified. You know, it's you look at the profits that the house builders have made over the last 20 odd years. I mean, it's outrageous, really. It's just money for old rope for throwing up substandard products at huge margins. I wouldn't lose any sleep if they get clobbered with more tax.
It isn't going to build houses, though. That's the only thing.
Well, that's the trouble, isn't it? Yeah.
You want 300,000 rather than 200. You've got to encourage these guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you try and recruit all the brickies. It would be possible. You'd never be able to do it. If you wanted to do it yourself, you'd forget it. You got no chance.
Yeah, no, all fair points. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move to another sector that should do well next year, if the small caps turn, is the fund managers. But particularly active small cap fund manager, Premier Miton, which has got one of the star fund managers that we all know, which is Gervais Williams, etc. How are you seeing sort of small cap fund managers over the next 12 months?
Well, we're spoiled for choice, aren't we? But a lot of them are cheap for a reason, you know, because they're seeing continuous fund outflows. So that's really the key metric to look at, isn't it? I think when we're looking, nearly all of them have got great dividend yields, nice, strong balance sheets. You know, the metrics look very attractive. But if they're hemorrhaging fund outflows, you know, you're going to have a shrinking business that could just fizzle out, particularly if they're having to sort of close entire funds because they become subscale. You know, then they're forced sellers and they make their performance stats even worse by selling against themselves. So I think it's a bit of care is needed with this sector. But I did look at Premier Miton's figures, I think it was last week, and I thought on balance that risk rewards looks very good. It's actually risen a bit since then. Basically, you're getting a 9.3% dividend yield, which I think is sustainable. It's paying out pretty much all of its earnings, but it produced actually quite reasonable figures for year ending September 2024. Obviously, they've had fund outflows They had fund outflows, but the asset under manager went up because of the performance of the funds wasn't that bad. And it still produced a very respectable profit. And it's, as I say, maintaining the dividend yield. It earned just over 6.5p and it's paying out 6p in dividends. It's got a very strong balance sheet, so it can afford to pay out all its earnings in divvies. I just think the value metrics on it look really attractive. Particularly if we get a bit of a bull market emerging in smaller caps, which I suspect we might, they don't just do small caps, obviously, but I think its performance stats might start to improve and it could even start to attract inflows, in which case you'd probably have a 50 to 100% upside on the current share price, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. And also, you've got the optionality of potentially being acquired by a bigger, you know, bigger business. Because I don't know what the market cap is. Is it sort of 120 or something like that? Or
105 currently.
105, yeah.
That is small, isn't it? Yeah.
And it could even, I mean, he's got a cash pile, so he could even buy somebody else, somebody, you know, a similar sort of note. Because I know Canaccord are looking to sell their UK wealth manager. That's been public knowledge. So it'd be that's the kind of thing, those bolt-on acquisitions. You just strip everything below gross margin, don't you? And it just goes straight into the same technology stack. So yeah, I'm with you. I think fund managers at some point will turn. And I think Richard Crowe would say that's turning into a bit of a bowl there. It's based out, hasn't he?
There was an interesting one that I've looked at and was talked about last night on Mellow, which was Tatton Asset Manager.
Yes.
Which is doing phenomenally well. They seem to have a very differentiated business model. Trouble is, it's expensive. You have to really pay up. But that just shows that, I think generally this is a very interesting sector, but you just want to avoid ones that are kind of seeing such big fund outflows that the business is almost dying. You know, those are, probably the ones to ignore.
Yeah, I think Tatton, rather than actually having the straight fund managers themselves, they do more sort of these model portfolios. So where they connect with the IFAs, and then the IFA does the risk analysis of the individual, and they say how old they are, what risk tolerance they need, and what income, and then they come out with effectively a lift and shift type of portfolio for them, which is not individual stocks. It's sort of like sectors and stuff like that, a model portfolio, which I think has chimed with a lot of people because it tends to be low cost and just use passives.
I was going
to
say, yeah, it's low cost and it's just drawing in billions and billions of more funds under management almost on a continuous basis, isn't it? So Tatton looks really interesting, but for me, a bit too expensive, I'm afraid.
Yeah. One I would highlight, which came out with some good results, which is a bit of a surprise, actually, was one I own is Victrex, which is nearly £1 billion business. It's basically a peat polymer expert. And what that is basically peat has been around for years, but it's super lightweight. It's strong. It's inert. And it's heat and chemical tolerant. And what that means, it goes into lots of really, high value applications. So it will go into things like aerospace because it's a lighter, composite, etc. Into planes, it'll go into cars, automotive, where battery life is, absolutely essential. But increasingly, it's going into medical, and they've got this new implant that they're trying to get through FDA clearance for their peak knee, which is, I think, if it gets clearance in India, might well go into service next year. And if you think about it, a lot of knee joints, I don't know if you've had one at all, Paul, yet, but a lot of them are still metal on metal, and they're rubbish. Even if you get a polymer on polymer, they're not very good, and they don't have a high success rate. Anyway, these are super durable, i.e. rather than having a life of 5 or 10 years, these are things that have 20 to 30 years. They're very lightweight. And therefore, they've got, the chance. But anyway, there's obviously still a question mark because you've got to commercialize it. But one thing which gave me confidence as a shareholder is that they're already doing lots of peak medical products for your back, for your spine, for your Achilles, and for all of it. So it's basically a very safe material that already goes into supporting other joints in humans. So a peak knee shouldn't be, massive. What they've got a base business. The sort of investment thesis is they've got a base business with secular growth drivers that should be able to drive organic volume growth of roughly around about mid to high single digits. Okay. On top of that, they've got five mega programs, and this is particularly in aerospace. I mean, just the stats from there, but from 500 kilograms at the moment per plane, they reckon they can get a 5 ton because of the weight and the power and the strength ratio. Likewise, with exactly the same with cars, medical parts will be amazing. Connected devices, likewise, and into sort of renewables. And what's really interesting, particularly on the medical side, which is what sort of piqued my interest, is that when you look at gross margins, they're 80% for medical, whereas they're only 40% for industrial. So if that takes off, then they're good. Now, the downside, the bear case, is that they're still 15 times PE, and the trading has been flat this last year. But they did the start of this year, which is what sent the shares up 20%, is that actually trading has now started to improve. And they came out with an inline statement, but that was better than expected, and that's why the shares shot up. I bought at a much higher level, sort of like 14 quid, I think, and I've just held through it, sort of stuff. So I've still got a long way. I'm waiting for the bigger prize. But all I would say is it's a crown jewel in industrial in the UK industrial market. And there's always a chance, obviously, somebody wants to put a slide rule on them, but they're not massively cheap, even though they do pay a nice dividend, I think.
Yeah, I looked at this one on my Substack on the 3rd of December. I'm not terribly, barely at all familiar with the products or anything like that, but I just did a desktop review of the numbers. This was September 2024 results, and I quite like it as well. I've marked it amber green, which is moderately positive. On the basis that you're getting it looked like a bit of an earnings miss. So I was quite surprised it did rise 17% on the day, but it's a very high margin business. It's making about 20% PBT margin, which tells you it's got a lot of pricing power, which I like a lot. The balance sheet's very good, 445 million net tangible asset value, negligible net debt. It generates, it's very cash generative, and it splits the cash generated between CapEx, 33 million, and paying divvies, 52 million. And that's it. It just generates loads of cash, funds its own CapEx, and pays the rest out in divvies. So you're getting about a nearly 6% dividend yield. I made the PE about 14 times, but I think that's based on forecast earnings rising. So I think this is definitely worth people having a look at, I think, and do some more detailed research. Obviously, I only do quite brief desktop reviews. Quite capital intensive. Fixed assets were 351 million. Reasonable, if not spectacular, ROCE. So, yeah, it ticks a lot of my boxes. I think Victrex is a good choice, Paul. So, yeah, thumbs up from me.
We'll wait and see. I've lost plenty of money on it so far. So, but I have my sort of time horizons for stocks are 3 to 5 years, or I tend to hold them until the investment thesis is broken. And if the share, you've got to face it that you can easily buy a share and then it can go down 10, 15, 20% quite quickly. And you could be 50% below, and you know, nothing's changed, but it's just as what the market does.
Yeah. The only thing, I think it did have quite a long downward trend in margins being squeezed, and shares peaked at over 30 quid and dropped down as low as 7 or 8. So it's had a bad run since 2018, hasn't it? About 6 years. So I suppose your thesis is now that it's overshot on the downside and it's due maybe a turn and a recovery, which
my thesis, it's a crown jewel. It's a trophy asset on the market. There's nothing like it. If you want to get into this, you know, effectively, you know, like peak knee, which frankly, that's massively patent, you know, sort of like protected, and barriers to entry are massive, and it can do that, obviously, make, you know, the peak parts. It just is something that is very hot. You can see it through the margins. It's very differentiated, and it's got pricing power, so it's got levers. It's got to pull the levers such that it doesn't stop growth. That's the key. The value to the customer is much higher than the cost of the product. That's the sort of the key difference.
Yeah, well, that comes through in the figures, definitely, I think. So, yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Got a quick question on, he's Paul the Parrot again, actually, mate. I know. He's asking about, your quick thoughts. And I know you don't really cover it now. Is Boohoo? Because obviously it's gone through so much problem with attack from Mike Ashley of late, and then got attack from Sheen and Timu, but with a bit of luck, actually, we might eventually get some protection from the Chinese sort of like, you know, importers in terms of, you know, closing off this VAT loophole. But anyway, I don't know how you view it at all.
I'm not interested in Boohoo at all now, nor ASOS, because they're loss making. So, you know, the business models are basically broken. No interest. The facts have completely changed. I was bullish on Boohoo when it was growing 20-25% per annum, made a good strong 10-11% EBITDA margin. But those days are long gone, so the business model doesn't work anymore. So I'm not interested. I know they're talking about breaking it up and getting more for Debenhams than the whole of the business is worth. I'd be amazed if they pull that off. I just don't think it's worth wasting any time on it, really.
Okay, we've got HP is asking about SSP, which is the airport sort of like a convenience store or store business. It does
catering,
sort of like
isn't it? All those stands in railway stations. Pretty good business. 1.5 billion market cap. Shares have been lively lately, haven't they?
Shut up.
PE of 15. I think this was the one that I have looked at it before, but it's got a rather overly indebted, weak balance sheet. I think they've done lots of acquisitions. So I don't really have a strong view either way on this one. I'm probably neutral on this.
One thing which I remember interviewing a fund manager on it, and they were talking through the actual investment case. And the one thing they really liked about it is you can't copy this. Not only have you got a sort of like a site inside sort of like, you know, departures lounge, etc.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But more so, which I hadn't appreciated, the staff have to be all security cleared. So you can't even if you wanted to buy a shop inside there, you know, as like all your staff would then have to go through security clearance. So actually, surprisingly enough, this is put your flag in a, you know, in an airport and you can charge almost what you like.
I mean, the only thing I would say with that is back in my retail FD days, we had we had a couple of ladies wear shops in Gatwick Airport and I think another airport. And the leases, they're quite brutal in the with the leases. You know, they jack up the rents. They often do turnover rents, and if you don't perform, you get booted out. So, you know, they will generally let those sites to the highest bidder. So, but I do take your point, though. I think with the railway stations and airports, it can be it's harder to get sites than yeah. in just say in a normal shopping centre, isn't it? But yeah.
Good. Okay, I've got a couple of people asking about Card Factory, which I was just looking at the chart, seems to have gone up and down of late. It reached topped out at about 145 in October, came crashing down to what's just under 80, and is now over a quid. I don't know. I haven't got a clue what's happening here. Is somebody buying and selling?
Yeah, I mean, it just at the peak, it just, I think we've talked about this recently. At the peak, it put out rather unimpressive H1 results. Which and the full year requires a very, very unusually strong uplift in H2. So that triggered a bit of a sell-off. And then I think there are quite a lot of short-term traders in it who I mean, I nearly bought some at about 83p near the low there, but I missed it, unfortunately. And I'm not going to chase it. Now it's gone up to a pound. So, but it still looks very good value. PE of 6.6. Dividend yield of 5.4%. It had serious financial problems before and during the pandemic, but it's traded its way through those. So it's been a very good turnaround, actually. So well done to anyone who caught that 80p low. I think you'll do well from that point, actually. Yeah. But it depends if they manage to hit the current forecast, which I think a lot of us are a bit sceptical about, that there might be a profit miss. On the way, just because the H2 loading seemed a bit implausible on the existing forecast. But we'll see. We'll see. You know, if it warns on profits, it'll be back down to 80p and maybe lower. Mm. So, but it is fundamentally a good business because it's vertically integrated, you see. It manufactures the cards as well as selling them. So it gets an exceptionally high gross margin and they're priced very, very competitively, much cheaper than, you know, your WH Smith or your Hallmarks or whatever. So it's fundamentally a good business and they sell a whole range of other complementary sort of gift products. So, yeah, I do like Card Factory. I think it's good value share.
Did I read somewhere they've just bought somebody in the States as well? Or was I imagining it?
I don't know, Paul.
Yeah, I might be moving on to my AI large language model and hallucinating. I don't know, but I thought they did.
Maybe we're getting confused. Here we are. Card Factory buys Garvan Holdings. Acquisition price $25 million. So that sounds like it's a US. Yeah, business. You're right. Yeah, you didn't hallucinate, Paul. You're correct. It's entering the US.
I thought I did anyway. I wasn't sure. Yeah. Okay, let's switch sectors. We've got Zigup, which is the old Ready Northgate business, commercial vans, but they do more than just rent them out. They do servicing of them, insurance, and they do effectively a one-stop shop if you're a one-man or a two-man type band, and they'll do fleets of these things for you. So you've got you can forget about all the management and the maintenance on it. How are you seeing this one? It's a... I think it's got a good balance sheet, actually, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, that's right. I flagged this one up when you asked for my sort of greens of the best share ideas of the last week. This I covered on my Substack on the 4th of December. It's always cheap. Or Ready Northgate, I prefer to call it. I think it's a very nice business. The H1 results came out. Now, earnings per share is falling, so it's down 16%. And the reason for that is because during the pandemic, they benefited greatly from the residual values of huge fleet of vehicles that they own for the accident, you know, the accident credit hire vehicles is one branch, and then the white vans that they buy in bulk and lease out individually, that's the other part. The residual values is the main issue here. But you see, that's already baked into the forecasts, and it's cheap, and you can lock in a 7% dividend yield if you buy Zigup roundabout now. I'm probably going to be trying to pick some of these up myself next week, so don't be surprised if it does appear on my portfolio. And what I like the fact that it's fully asset backed. The balance sheet is strong with over 800 million net tangible asset value, which is mainly vehicles. Well, over a billion in vehicles, less some debt, but the debt is not onerous at all. It's actually quite a moderate loan to value. And the market cap is 800 million. So you're literally paying pound for pound, fully asset backed, and you're getting a 7% dividend yield. So I like this. The downside risk, I guess, is if secondhand vehicle prices continue falling far more than expected. That's probably your main downside risk there.
Yeah.
Or if a big insurance client jumps ship and moves their business to a different, because there are quite a few of these credit hire businesses. I think ZigUp is the market leader though. So yeah, it's just a straightforward value share. I think I like it.
Yeah. What was surprising actually is that, and I think the economies of scale must be working into it, but what surprised me is the EBIT margins are over 10% forecast for the next 12 months, which says to me they've got some wiggle room. There probably is a market that they haven't got that much pricing power because, you know, vans and not, but because they've got the scale, they've got a lower cost base than anybody else. Yeah. So they do it better than anybody else, hence they can have wider margins. Interesting.
Yeah,
anyway.
That makes sense. And I don't understand why we got that really sharp fall recently, because my reading of the numbers was that they said the outlook is unchanged and remains in line with market expectations for the full year. So I didn't see any justification for that quite sizable vertical drop that you see there last week.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it's a buying opportunity. I don't know.
Yeah, it might be that people got a bit worried about the extra employer NI. I don't know, but hey, I'm clutching at straws there, no doubt about it. Okay, yeah. One thing I thought would be worth just updating investors, which I talked about last week, just quickly, is Ixico, which is this basically the neuroscience expert that does MRI analysis on brain scans, and it came out with results. And the reason why I just alert it. People, I think there's a strong chance they're going to upgrade this year. And the reason why I say that is because their H2 last year, their run rate, if you double it, they will blitz through their full year expectations for this year. Plus, they've just signed a new Huntington £500,000 contract as well. So their order book has just shot up as well. It's a very, very high value specialized area that they're trying to, they're not branching out. They're already in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, but they're trying to upscale into those areas from their sort of core historical into Huntington's. And again, I think it's a bit of a unique asset, but it's only just a 10 million market cap, but I could see these shares re-rate significantly over the long term. They're just not that illiquid, that liquid at the moment. If you want to put some money in, but
I mean, I've looked at this one myself, and actually I did own some for 6 months or so last year, because it's a very small business. That's really why I decided to move on in the end. You know, it's bumping along at between 5 and 10 million a year revenues. It's currently near the lower end of that range and loss making. I don't really see much of a likelihood that this is going to sort of scale up. I just think it's a very small niche business that probably won't really go anywhere, but I don't know. Sorry to be a misery.
I own shares in it. If I could have bought more, I would have bought more, but I just couldn't. And I would say if the new CEO gets anywhere near his target, which he thinks he can, which is ultimately 20 million, you know, pounds, turnover. His initial objective in the next 2 or 3 years is to get to 10 million, which is, you know, double. But if they get anywhere near, you know, 20, yeah, this will be over a quid. It will absolutely blitz, because the drop through rate is 80 is enormous, because nobody else can do these type of stuff.
That's very optimistic, but good luck with it.
I can give you evidence, but I won't, you know, all I would, I'm just in a big position because I decided I'm going to get to, but if you're one of the largest sort of like, you know, biopharma companies, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars market cap, would you put business to these guys unless they're the best people, because these trials they're running are literally billions and billions and billions. They've got to be working. So it's a statement of the, you know, the obvious, such that the endorsement value of these big pharma using these guys has got, they've got something anyway. That's been my take. But anyway, let's
as I say, historically it bumped along at about 9 or 10 million a year revenue and made about a million a year profit. So it's a proper business, but they've been struggling the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
10 million earned revenue only gets them back to where they were about 7 years ago. So I don't know. I think I'm a bit more skeptical on this one, but I'll keep an eye on it.
We'll have a little wager this time next Christmas, okay? if they're at least 20% higher than they currently are, you can buy me a pint. And if they haven't,
I'll buy you a pint anyway, Paul.
And if they're below 20%, I'll buy you 10 pints, okay? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll keep a close eye on it. It's not a bad company. I don't want to sort of pour cold water on it. We'll wait and see.
Okay, let's go. Let's move to consumer again. Let's go to holidays. We've got on the beach. I know you quite sort of piqued your interest, but we also had a very positive trading update. Was it this morning or yesterday from TUI saying that it started seeing some pretty strong forward bookings for winter and to summer. How are you looking at On the Beach? It's much smaller.
Yeah, well, I was very impressed with On the Beach. My friend John, who lives in Malta, he flagged this up to me, and he was absolutely right. Excellent results came out, I think it was last week. They've also announced these medium-term targets, which are to substantially grow the business. So I crunched the numbers in an article last week, and I came to the conclusion that, you know, if they do attain these medium term targets, you've got more than 100% upside on the current share, on even the increased recent higher share price. Even after the big rise in share price we had last week, it's still only on a forward PE of 12.3 times. Now, you probably wouldn't value a holiday company on much more than that anyway, would you? Mm-hmm. But given that this thing's performing well, it's got a good balance sheet as well. It segregates the client cash in a trust account, which I like to see. I think it's got a lot going for it. It looks like people are banking some profit now. It has come off the top a bit, but I think that's definitely an interesting one for people's watch list. And funnily, I don't look at TUI, so I wasn't aware that had updated positively. So thanks for flagging that. But we did have EasyJet and Jet2, both of which, of course, are more than airlines. They also do package holidays as well now, very successfully. They've both put out very good trading updates recently. So it seems like, certainly this year anyway, consumers have really been prioritizing holidays over other areas of spend like DIY. So I thought that was quite interesting. I missed it. I didn't really pick up on the fact that this was all happening. So I don't particularly want to chase these prices now they're higher. But to people who did spot that the holidays sector was strong, very well done.
Yeah, I mean, one thing was, again, a possible sort of driver that sort of like occurred to me, but I'd like to test it with you, is the thesis anyway, is the is because we've had real wage increases and minimum increases in the, you know, increases in the minimum wage, etc. as well.
Yeah.
And actually the lower income bracket or the mid to lower income bracket are actually doing pretty well compared to the, you know, in terms of real income, etc. And therefore, if you're offering an all-in-one sort of packaged holiday, actually your typical bread and butter customer is doing really, really well. Whereas if you go up market into sort of like, you know, bespoke stuff that where people have got, you know, families that would want, I don't know, go safari or something like that, then they've probably got problems with school fees and all, you know, with the VAT and this sort of stuff. So actually, I think the demographic on the consumer at the lower end and the middle end, because they've got more money in the pocket, if you're offering them good value, you know, they know what they're going to get type deals for their holidays, they're going for it like, you know, hot potatoes, hot cakes, in fact, not hot potatoes.
Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, I can't really comment on it, but that seems to make sense. And also, I think Turkey and some other destinations where they've had elevated inflation are much more attractive, pulling in lots of people, I think. So yeah, it just seems to be a nice area, doesn't it? Holidays again. You would have thought people would have got that out of their system after the we've had several years since the lockdowns ended, but maybe. Well, it's quite obvious people are still very, very keen to have holidays, and we've not had very nice weather in Britain for a while, have we? Really? So maybe
really?
That helps.
I noticed. Absolutely tipped it down for 2 years. Okay, we got a cheeky question coming in from Nigel Batty. Seems he's asking about De La Rue, which is the sort of like I think it's a bit of a special situation at the moment, but
it's
the printer currency business.
Yeah, I've got some of these. I think it's very cheap, actually, because if you look at the announcement, they've sold their, I think it was the authentication division, wasn't it? They've got a really blowout price for that, but it's not going to complete. They've got to sort of demerge it for a while, and that doesn't complete till next year, middle of next year, I think. But, I mean, my sum of the parts valuation comes in way above the current share price, so that's why I hold it personally. And they're also trying to sell the other division, and which press reports have said they're in advanced negotiations on getting that. So if they get a blowout valuation on the other division as well, you know, this could be quite interesting. But having said that, I bought right at the high point on the spike of the announcement, and then I was underwater for a while, and it's only just come back up to break even. So I haven't really called it very well so far. But I'd be interested to hear what other people think, because I think the way I crunch the numbers, this thing looks cheap, very cheap.
Yeah, I think it's a sort of one of those which is it hasn't got a strategic review, but I think it's looking to sell itself for, you know, because I think there's another printer currency maker out in Europe, I believe, who did actually years and years ago put an offer in for De La Rue, which was at much higher levels, which was rejected. But I think there's only one or two or three maybe in the whole of the world who are allowed, because that's such a regulated industry, printing.
That's right.
Currency.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there's hidden value in this one potentially. Yeah. So yeah. We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. But the only thing on the is that if there's only one or two, it's a total oligopoly. They're it's never going to get through the competition authorities, is it?
Oh, probably that's not. A good point. Yeah, but it is a breakup situation, yeah. And it just looks like some of the parts could be substantially more than the current price, and all the debt's going to be wiped out, and it'll be substantially net cash after the authentication sale goes through. So you're then going to basically have something trading at not far off its own net cash, plus with the cash division thrown in for free. So yeah, it could be interesting.
Yeah, we got a question coming in from Craig W. He's asking, Paul, when are you going to release your top 20 for 25? He's saying,
"Oh, I'll be putting that on my for subscriber only on my Substack. It'll be, you know, end of December."
Okay, good. I'll just again, we talked about it last week, and I know we both quite liked it. Water Intelligence, they came out with Q3 results on a trading update, which were all in line. I just repeat what I said last week, that I'm buying this for the longer term, and the catalyst to move the shares, in my view, will be the EPS increase in going sort of mid double digit EPS growth next year. They're basically, these guys do minimally invasive leak detection systems, largely out in the States. What's really interesting as well, as I mentioned last week, they do this, it's pulse acoustic technology for sewers in the UK that helps all the utilities stop stormwater and sewage being released in reservoirs and the sea and rivers and stuff. They're trying to actually implement that out in the States, where again it's a massive problem. And I think that's partly why they're buying up some of their franchisees, because if you've got a franchise base, implementing new products in new territories isn't as fast and as easy as it would be if it was all underneath your own control. But if that goes well, that could be a real beauty, because I know the pulse technology in the UK is selling well. There's no doubt about it. It's doing, which is not surprising. We've got to clean up the flipping rivers
I think most of their business is swimming pool leaks and things like that in America, isn't it? I think the vast bulk of their business. But it's a good choice, this one. Forward PE of 12.4. Yeah. And it used to be on a crazy valuation. It's come all the way back down to it's a value share now, I would say. Growth at reasonable price. Yeah, again, we talked about it last week. I agree with you on this one. I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, good. Well, we'll wait and see. Got a question coming on Made Tech, which I think is basically a public sector IT services business. If I remember rightly, was it IPO sort of like back in 2021, did really well and then fell down, but I think has now started to come back of late.
Yeah, this was a disaster. Yeah, you're right. I always get muddled up between this one and TPX Impact. There's a degree of similarity. Yeah, this floated in 2021, so that automatically tells you it'll be a pile of junk. And it's lost sort of 80-odd%. It has been rebounding lately.
Yes.
Let me just quickly call up. I think this might be the one where it's got a nice balance sheet. Yes, here we are. I last covered this on the 20th of November. AGM trading update ahead of expectations. But the broker only increased it from 2.6 million to 2.8 million adjusted EBITDA. So not really a game-changing upgrade, but nevertheless an upgrade. And only about half the EBITDA turns into actual real profit before tax. I took the view that it's rallied too much. It's a fairly low-quality business, in my opinion. And I think this bounce, it's had quite a substantial bounce recently in percentage terms. Anyway, I think it's run its course. I think it's overpriced now, actually. But,
I think the biggest risk with something like MadeTech is the public sector, i.e. they change. You know, if you become dependent on one particular source of revenue, particularly if it's the government, and things change like the wind. I've been there many a time, and it's painful, whether it's been in contracting or whatever like that. It's just... You never know which way the politics run. And if you're the wrong side of it, unfortunately, you can be collateral damage.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of these tiny companies, things like MadeTech, you know, and they're very competitive projects that they're tendering for. That's why they hardly make any real profit, you know. So just because, we've won a 10 million contract with this or that government department doesn't mean a thing. You know, they might have tendered it at a level where they don't make a bean on the contract. So I don't think it's that good. The only reason I did market Amber, so I'm not negative, but that was mainly because it's got a very nice balance sheet with plenty of cash. So you can sleep at night with MadeTech, at least on its financial position. I think I just think it's a very ordinary, very small, unremarkable business. You know, I don't really see any value in the shares personally. But
you could get taken out. There's no doubt about it because there's consolidation in that area. But I'm with you. It wouldn't be something which would particularly attract me. Coming to the end, it'd be remiss of me not asking about Plexus's AGM statement. I don't know whether you've got any quick thoughts on that one. I think
it was just a holding announcement. There was nothing new in it. I like the strategy of the new management team. They're in internal promotions who are just focusing on the areas of the business that could generate the highest return and the quickest response. They've got a 6 month payback on their capex, which is the fastest payback I've ever heard of for pretty much any company. And they've got demand for these wellheads. They've got new ones in production, but it's still work in progress. And we know it's going to have to raise some cash, not necessarily from an equity raise, but there's a very interesting special business in there. It's just a pity that it needs more funding. But the way I look at it is the downside case is that the company gets sold for maybe two or three times the current market cap. That's the downside case. The upside case is, you know, the demand is returning for its products. It's got new ones in production. So, but it's highly speculative, not for widows and orphans. That's why it's I'm maxed out with my largest position because I like a calculated risk, you know, and I'm prepared to live with the consequences, good or bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the worst case is two or three times, then I'll take that any day of the week.
Well, that's my view, because we know the technology is very valuable because they've sold, I think, three times now. They've sold multi-million dollar lumps of IP, which we're just sort of carving off a bit of IP that they didn't really need, and they raised 5.4 million from that in December. So that tells me this stuff has, you know, a huge catalogue of patents. It's very valuable know-how, and you know the technology is worth more than 10 million quid. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, we've got one more question from Otman Salamat. He's asking about, which I can answer, it's on Avacta, the therapeutics, basically. This is a clinical stage medical company in oncology. It's got two parts to it. Its first one is the Precision platform, which is doing a smart targeted chemotherapy, and that is going through phase one clinical trials. They're still obviously making progress, but obviously that's a wait and see. And then it's got a diagnostics business that I think he's trying to sell. I mean, frankly, I love the technology. I think it's really, really good. I don't own the shares. I prefer, if I'm in healthcare, which has been a wrong strategy, to go onto into companies actually with revenues. But yeah. I can see, to be perfectly honest, I can see the attractions, and I know it's a very popular share. The thing is that this one, if I was a shareholder, you just got to be very patient, because if they can, again, it's a speculative share, but if they can get the pivotal phase two trials, if they can get a positive response at the end point for the phase two, and they're doing the end of phase one, then that will basically, they'll be able to, you know, you could see the shares going, and I'm just putting a finger out of my head, but easily 10 times, because chemotherapy is massive, and this technology allows old chemotherapy drugs safely hit hard tumors in people's bodies. So they've had very good safety and efficacy data so far at phase one, but it's only a small trial, so you can't say.
Trouble is, Paul, looking at the numbers, though, it's losing 25 to 30 million quid a year. So my immediate question to you is, how much cash has it got in the bank?
Yeah, well, that's what they're hoping to sell the diagnostics business to help fund that. Okay.
Have we got a number on that?
No, we haven't got a number, but it'll be worth about 30 to 40 million quid.
Oh, okay. So that will buy it another year or a year and a half, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, hey, well, it's one of those things. If you've got in the biotech sector, if you've got a really good new product, you'll get funding. There's no doubt about it. And this is one of those which falls straight up there. I mean, literally, their total addressable market just for the precisions. I mean, they've got the lead candidate is the AVA 6000. If I recall, their total addressable market is, you know, peak sales of over $2 billion a year. They've got another one which could be $4 billion. But it all depends on them getting through these pivotal phase two.
Yes.
Because the drug is already proved to be effective, the chemotherapy, you don't need massive phase three trials. You just got to get through the efficacy on the phase two. But anyway, I'd have to explain all the science, and we haven't got enough time to do all that. I would say is I like it. I don't own the shares, but you've just got to be patient if you do. I think if you're committed to it, then you've got to be patient and give it a chance, and don't worry about the day-to-day shenanigans of the share price.
Yeah, I mean, these sorts of things I just completely avoid, because hardly any of them succeed. And the ones that do succeed, somebody buys them just at the point that they start to turn the corner. Yeah. So you take all the risk. You have to fund the thing over about 10 years with repeated placings at lower and lower prices. And then someone snatches away the upside if it does work. So, no, definite thumbs down from me.
Yeah. Well, I think the market cap is probably about 500 million, 600 million, something like that.
161 million I've got.
Okay, yeah. Well, if you can have a peak sales of in the billions, this will be worth five billion quid. Okay, but you're right. It's a shock. It's a lot of
and
money.
The chance of that happening is probably less than 1%.
No, I don't. I think it's much higher than that. I hope for people who actually have, you know, hard tumor cancers. I sincerely hope it actually comes to it, because it will be revolutionary for.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a separate issue, isn't it? We always hope these innovations work for the sake of humanity.
But definitely. It will also be affordable. That's the other side, because the chemotherapy ones they're using are all off patent. It's only effectively the technology, the precision technology, which makes it. Anyway, we go into technology. I'd like to say, to close, big thanks everyone for your questions. absolutely. Thanks again, Paul, for joining me, and big thanks to the sponsor, goodmoneydie.com, because they've helped put the lights on. So
Absolutely.
I think our next, I think it's a week Friday, isn't it? We're doing a big Christmas clear up, aren't we? Three p.m. Oh no, is it? Yeah, it's 3 p.m. on Friday, whatever it is, the 19th or 20th or something like that.
Right. Okay. Yep. I'm sure it's in my diary. So cool. Looking forward to it, Paul.
Cheers then. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks everyone. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.